For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Two state Senate bills target the traffic problem on I-81 and just in time to make it under the crossover day deadline. A fifth Republican throws his hat into the ring to challenge Senator Tim Kaine this November. And current and former employees at the Cargill plant in Dayton allege abuse by the company. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, February 15th.
Support for the WMRA Daily is provided by the shops at Stonefield at Route 29 and Hydraulic Road in Charlottesville, featuring a collection of shopping, dining, and entertainment experiences with ample parking. Learn more at shopsatstonefield.com.
Lawmakers in the Shenandoah Valley succeeded in getting two bills targeting traffic on Interstate 81 passed just before a key deadline on Tuesday. The Daily News Record and Richmond Times-Dispatch report that one bill introduced by Republican Senator Emmett Hanger of Mount Solon would establish a fuel tax on distributors in the western part of Virginia, the proceeds of which would be put into a Western Virginia Transportation Fund in order to fund improvements to I-81. A competing bill introduced by Rockingham Republican Senator Mark Obenshane, who, by the way, voted against that bill by Senator Emmett Hanger. Obenshane's bill that also passed Tuesday would direct the Commonwealth Transportation Board to study and report financing options to improve I-81, including raising revenue for improvements from tolls on heavy trucks. Both bills passed just before the General Assembly's crossover day on Tuesday, when all non-budget bills must clear out of each house from which they originate. And that means the General Assembly is now halfway through the 2018 legislative session, and both sides are highlighting legislative victories. From partner station WCVE in Richmond, Craig Harper reports.
Speaker of the House Kirk Cox says he's proud of Republican efforts to cut regulations as well as to create sexual harassment training requirements for lawmakers and staff and to equalize partisan representation on the State Board of Elections.
So far this session, we have prioritized the real problems people talk about at home.
Democratic House Minority Leader David Toscano says he's pleased with the House vote this week to raise the felony larceny threshold from $200 to $500, but disappointed that Republicans blocked additional gun control legislation.
You can't always get what you want, but if you try, sometimes you get what you need. And we have been trying for some time to get some of these passed, and we are now getting some of these things passed.
Majorities in both parties seem happy with bills to re-regulate public utilities and give limited refunds for overcharges to consumers. Craig Carper, WMRA News, Capitol Square.
Also, the fifth Republican is now running in the June primary for a chance to challenge Democratic Senator Tim Kaine in November. Bert Mizusawa is a retired major general in the U.S. Army Reserve and foreign policy advisor to Donald Trump's presidential campaign. The Richmond Times-Dispatch reports that Mizusawa filed a statement of candidacy on Friday. His campaign manager, Mike Wade, tells The Washington Post that frustration over the recent three-day government shutdown helped to motivate Mizusawa to enter the race. He will run against Prince William County Board of Supervisors Chairman Corey Stewart, Minister E.W. Jackson, State Delegate Nick Freitas, and businessman and military veteran Ivan Raiklin. Finally, local activists and union organizers have filed a charge against Cargill in Dayton for retaliating against employees because of their union activities. They say that Cargill is not living up to its own code of conduct. WMRE's Christopher Clymer Kurtz reports.
2 weeks ago, a group of advocates and former employees marched to Cargill in Dayton to deliver a copy of an unfair labor practices charge against the company, calling for it to adhere to its own code of conduct that respects employees' rights to organize. In provided audio, Pastor Stephanie Sorge Wing of Trinity Presbyterian Church spoke on behalf of the Harrisonburg group Faith in Action to a Cargill representative who documented the group's concerns.
We stand in solidarity with the workers. We want our neighbors and our sisters especially to be treated fairly and with dignity.
The charge they delivered was filed with the National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB, earlier this year by the Maryland-based United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 400, said union organizer and interpreter Hannah Kane. The charge states that within the prior 6 months, Cargill had retaliated against four union supporters by terminating employment, denying overtime opportunities, assigning less favorable jobs, and denying or reducing work opportunities and hours, quote, solely because of their union activities. One of them, now a former employee, is 54-year-old Ernestina Castillo. At her kitchen table, the smell of freshly fried plantains and the chirps of her pet birds warming the room, she said through an interpreter that she was fired at the end of October after she was injured on a new line that she had been transferred to, and after she had begun wearing a union shirt and had signed a union card. She had worked for the company for more than 13 years.
Everyone else who has gotten injured on that line was given a transfer to a different line, or they were at least given additional training about how to work that line. And for me, they wouldn't give me either a transfer or training. When I couldn't put up with the pain anymore, I went to the infirmary to ask for the nurse to give me pain medication. And that was when my supervisor came to the infirmary and told me that there was no more work for me. I want to work, but they kicked me out.
The injury was their excuse to fire you because you wore the union shirt?
Yes,
yep, that's it.
Cargill's director of communications is Mike Martin, based in Kansas. He wrote in an email that no one was available for interview for this report. He said that the company prefers, quote, to work directly with our team members to address issues and resolve concerns, and referred to the company's statement on human rights, which states, we respect freedom of association and the right to collectively bargain, enabling employees to join a union and voluntarily negotiate. He also wrote that in accordance with its rights and obligations, quote, at various times, Cargill brings in both internal and external resources that have experience with unions to share with our employees facts about union organizing and unions. He declined to elaborate on what is important for employees to consider when deciding about unions and organizing, and he declined to comment on Cargill's relationship with one of the company's external resources, Culture Consulting, LLC, a South Carolina-based employee and labor relations consultancy. Culture did not respond to an emailed request for comment, but its website describes its labor relations services in part as, quote, exposing the truth about union organizer tactics. According to a 2016 report filed by Cargill with the NLRB, Cargill hired Culture to, quote, assist Cargill in communicating facts and legally accurate information to employees when we knew that a union was attempting to have our employees sign authorization cards. This is troubling to Michael Snell-Fikema, a coordinator for the Community Solidarity with Poultry Workers group in Harrisonburg.
If you want to understand how these labor consultancies work, they toe the fine line. They find a way for the company to do union busting without getting nailed for it. And Cargill knows this.
He points to a 2015 NLRB administrative law judge's decision from California that names Culture and the same agent who has come to Dayton. It details interrogation and other threats in response to workers' attempts to organize. He said that the reports showing Culture's role at Cargill reflect only the tip of the iceberg, because while firms like Culture do have to disclose activities that bring them into direct contact with employees, they do not have to report their training of supervisors. And it's often the supervisors, he said, who engage in harassment activity and, quote, psychological warfare, such as trying to trick employees into doing things they could be fired for. He's heard reports of such violations of employee rights, he said, but they're difficult to prove.
I hope Cargill will accept the rights of the workers to organize, that that's a way to move from a model of the disposable workforce, which is the one they have now, to a model of a sustainable workforce, which is the only model that has a future, the only model that's good for the company, the workers, and the community.
He also wants Ernestina Castillo to be reinstated. She said she was happy back on her earlier line and needs to work.
I've been spending all my savings, everything that I managed to save over the years. And this month, my sister paid my rent.
For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
You can learn more about that story at WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Livicki. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your Thursday.